This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.
Get ready to kick up some dirt and mud because it's time for San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio with Dave Stahl. SDORC is here to further off-roading as a safe family experience while promoting and preserving the natural environment. So whether it's bikes, buggies, trucks, or trikes, San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio brings you the latest news and initiatives in preserving the use of off-highway vehicles and protecting the land and wildlife at the same time. Because, together, everyone achieves more. Now, here is your host, Dave Stahl.
All right, folks, welcome to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The answer.
That's Ed Stoven. Audrey's off today. We want to thank Scooney Side by Side for sponsoring this segment, located in El Cajon right off of Greenfield. They're there for all your accessory upgrades on all your side-by-sides on the market. They're at 202 Greenfield Drive in El Cajon. You can give them a call at 619-499-7536. Anything and everything you need is right there at Scooney's. You can also get passes to the desert and check out all the latest equipment. In fact, if you have a Polaris, they have a Fosgate sound system that they're just about giving away. They got a ton of them. But
I hate those side-by-sides with the loud stereos driving around in the desert.
I want to put one on mine, man. But they won't put one on mine because it doesn't. The Fosgate won't hook up to a Honda, man. I want to put one on that'll make paint peel.
The only time I
All right. Okay. So, hey, I understand we've got a guest on the line.
Yes, we do. We have the SDORC and Corva state lobbyist, Mark Smith. Can you say hi, Mark?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Great, Dave. Nice to meet you.
Hey, welcome to the new position. I've heard nothing but great things, and everybody's pretty excited about having you on board, which I think will be a major benefit to the off-road community.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and I'll start by acknowledging that I'm not Kathy. I've got a little bit of a learning curve, and you guys had such an excellent lobbyist and representation from Kathy in the community for all these years. It's really a tragedy what happened to her.
But sure was.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be filling this role. I really believe that communities like the off-road community need to have a voice in Sacramento. But like I tell my clients all the time, if you're not at the table, you're on the table. And so being a part of the dialogue is particularly important.
Absolutely. All right, Ed, take it away.
Well, thank you, Dave. And I've worked with a number of lobbyists, and I think Mark is a very high-level guy. We are so fortunate to have Mark on our side. So there's a couple of bills that we're interested in. So when the legislative deadline passed, thousands of bills were introduced, and we had Mark sort through for bills that would affect the off-road community. And we whittled it down to about 28 bills. And then through there, we found about 10 bills that could affect us and two bills that we want to take a position on. So, Mark, let's focus on those two bills. Do you remember what they are? 903 and 3163?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you want to talk a little bit about the legislative process just to make sure your listeners understand sort of how this works?
Like, thank you. That's a great idea. I'm sorry. Sometimes I jump right to the meat and potatoes, but it's good to understand what the process is and how we can have an effect on that, especially with your help. So how does that work, Mark?
Yeah. So we've got 120 members of the California legislature and one governor, and down in your area, your listeners may be familiar with people like Tony Atkins, who was the head of the Senate for a couple of years, and Brian Jones, who's the co-chair of our Outdoor Sporting Caucus, which kind of involves itself in all forms of outdoor recreation. And you've got others as well, Chris Ward, people like David Alvarez, people like that. These legislators, their job is to introduce bills, and they introduce about 2,500 of them every year, 5,000 in a two-year session. So you're probably thinking right now, do we actually need 5,000 new pieces of legislation or 5,000 new laws in California every year? And the answer is probably not. But we do end up signing about 1,000 of them into law. And legislators introduce bills at the beginning of the year, and then there's this kind of policy and deliberative process that takes place, and the bills are analyzed for their policy impacts, and, you know, are they going to do this, are they going to do that, and groups weigh in support and opposition. The bills are also analyzed for their fiscal impact to the state. You know, the last couple of years, the states had this huge budget surplus, and now we find ourselves with this huge budget deficit, right? And so that has an impact on the type of legislation that goes through the process. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if a bill is agreed to by enough members of the legislature, whether those are Democrats or Republicans, and it works its way through the process, it can end up on the governor's desk, and the governor can either veto it or he can sign that bill into law. And for communities like ours, and I do a lot of work with groups that are, you know, hunting groups, fishing groups, Second Amendment type groups, we end up playing a lot of defense because, believe it or not, even in a place like California, where we're known for our forms of outdoor recreation, there are people that just generally don't support the concept of gasoline-powered vehicles driving around in our natural and scenic areas, right? And so there are people out there who don't want us to do what we're doing, or there are people out there who think we should be doing things differently. Occasionally, there are very positive things that we as communities put forward, but like I'd say, on the whole, communities like ours play a little bit more defense than we do offense. And that's sort of where these pieces of legislation come in. And that's why it's so important to take a look at all of the bills that are introduced every 2 years, because you never know if somebody's going to come forward and propose to close off access to this area over here, or to change the regulations related to the way that you conduct yourself in a particular area. And that can have a dramatic impact on the user community and access to recreation and opportunity to recreation.
Yeah, that's a pretty good synopsis of what's going on up there. And out of those 1,000 bills that go through, a lot of them are just minor adjustments to previous legislation. There are some that start new programs and do big things, but a lot of it is sort of touch-up work. So we don't think 1,000 new programs are being introduced each year. Sometimes they just make very small modifications to existing programs. So Mark, what are we interested in this year?
Well, you know, I know you want to talk specifically about these two pieces of legislation, but just to kind of give your listeners sort of a broad overview of kind of what gets introduced. You know, there's a lot of stuff about environmental sort of like wildlife corridors and connectivity and, you know, the impacts that recreation would have on those sorts of things. This is a year where we've seen a lot of introduction of legislation around electric bikes. You know, we've got these class one, class two, class three bikes. You've got people modifying them, and you've got distinguishment between whether they should be on road, off road, whether or not people should be wearing helmets, you know, how fast they can go, all these kinds of things, right? And so these are the kinds of pieces of legislation that we're generally tracking. You've got monument designations, right? You've got expansions of protected areas or moving things into new designated protections. And then we've got the two bills that you wanted to highlight. One related to PFAS or PFOS. These are those forever chemicals that you've been hearing a lot about that kind of they get in the water, they kind of get into consumer products, but they're really critical in terms of manufacturing and providing the things that we use for off-road outdoor recreation, from vehicles to the parts that go into engines, to textiles, to the safety clothing you wear, to the helmets you wear, everything else, right? And then we've got a great bill that you guys have decided to support, which would give active duty service members and veterans free access to state parks. And, you know, the cost of getting access to these areas just keeps going up every year. So we could delve into each of those in a little bit more detail, but that's sort of like a broad picture of the sort of things that we're keeping an eye on up here in Sacramento.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll just get right into it on SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. All right, folks, welcome. You are listening to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Segment's brought to you by Ed Hansen Muffler. If you need any kind of muffler work, you can't beat Ed Hansen's Muffler. Ed Hansen's Muffler, give them a call at 619-698-7030. They are right there on Barcelona Street in Spring Valley, 3916 north of Barcelona, to be exact. Anything and everything you need, aluminum custom bending, turbo back exhaust systems, cat back exhaust system, dual exhaust, you know, full high flow catalytic converters, smog compliant exhaust systems. You can do it all at Ed Hansen's Muffler, where all your pipe dreams come true. All right, let's go ahead and get back to our guest, Mark Smith. He is our state lobbyist for CORVA and SDORC.
Yeah. So, Mark, what bills are we looking at this year?
Yeah. So, again, you know, we're going to talk a little bit right now about SB 903 and AB 3163. So one of these is a Senate bill. One of these is an assembly bill. The Senate bill, why don't we start with that one, SB 903, introduced by a pretty influential member of the Senate Democratic Caucus, Nancy Skinner, out of the Bay Area. But, you know, this is a bill that deals with these so-called forever chemicals. These are the sorts of things that are finding their way into our water supplies and other things, and are, you know, not the greatest, right? Nobody wants to drink these things. We all want to be mindful of the types of chemicals that we're introducing into the environment. But, you know, this is such a sweeping bill the way that it's written. And the reason it's a concern for the off-road community, in addition to hundreds of other organizations, I mean, just so you get the sense of this, right? This is not something that SDORC is out there opposing by itself, right? But the list of opposition spans everybody from the American Chemistry Council to the California Chamber of Commerce to the California New Car Dealers Association to the RV industry to biotech to clothing and textile manufacturers. It just goes, the Grocers Association just goes on and on and on. But for us in particular, these chemicals are found in the supply chain, in the manufacturing process for all sorts of automotive things, gaskets, rings, valves, hoses in the fuel system, wiring and circuit boards, pull cables, shock absorbers and bushings. They're in electric vehicle batteries. They're in, you know, fuel oxygenation separation systems. There are other electronic components and accessories. So basically, you take a look at the car you drive, or you take a look at, you know, what you use to recreate off-road. And it's been estimated by some people that in the average car, there are over 8,000 different components that have these chemicals associated with them in one shape or another, right? So a bill that comes forward that proposes a sweeping ban on the use or the introduction of these kinds of chemicals into the supply chain or products that California consumers purchase will have a detrimental impact on your ability to, you know, not only purchase a new product, but get replacement parts, right? Your folks are probably often replacing things, you know, and so if you can't get access to those parts because somebody's not making them in a way that is California legal, and then they can't be sold here, something will break on your vehicle and you won't be able to repair it and you won't be able to use your vehicle. So this bill is basically in the first set of policy hearings. We are not alone in terms of the concerns that we have with the proposal, and there'll be a good period of time this year that we have to talk about the broad nature of this policy and whether or not it should go forward, whether it should be amended, whether certain industries should be exempted. So that's kind of a high-level overview of this specific issue. But, I mean, just to give you an idea, like if something like this were to pass, it would have an immediate overnight impact on the way that we recreate in this community, the products that we are able to buy, and what you're able to do with them.
Yeah, it would be a crippling effect to the California economy, and millions of people would be very, very damaged, really hurt by their inability to purchase and maintain vehicles and other items. It sounds, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. I'm not sure who brought this this idea to Senator Skinner, an environmental organization, and of course they have good intentions, and I don't want poison to get into me or anybody I care about. But it has to be more surgical than a sweeping ban. So that's interesting that you said there could be amendments that could limit and exclude. And I hadn't really thought about that. I thought it was just yes or no, and we are no. But maybe the right kind of amendments could make it palatable to everybody.
Right. I mean, the car manufacturers, for example, the RV Industry Association, another group I represent, the National Marine Manufacturers Association, they represent all the people that build boats in the United States. You know, those industries are going to be looking to carve out protections for the engines that they build, for the products they put together. And we could be covered by the scope of, you know, some of those amendments. The Motorcycle Industry Council, for example, right? Like we run in very parallel lines with those organizations. And so what's good for them is good for us. And we work kind of collectively on this. But for those of your listeners out there that are like, oh, do I own anything with these chemicals in it? Absolutely, right? And even just go look at your closet. If you own a jacket, if you've got a water repellent jacket that you like to wear when you're out there or something that's like a windbreaker, chances are that those companies have these products embedded in the products that you're purchasing. And so, you know, just to make sure that, like, if we're going to impose a ban, okay, maybe we could do that, but let's make sure we've got alternatives in the marketplace, right? Maybe we come up with a new set of chemicals that work for this process or another thing. And let's make sure we don't outpace technology, right? Let's not put a ban in place when we don't have the ability to provide replacements into the marketplace. So that's kind of 903 in a snapshot.
Yeah. But you know, Mark, that seems to be the trend. You know, when these people put bills forward, they don't really think it out. They don't look at the long term. I mean, you know, and I'll just drift a little bit. When you talk electric vehicles, you know, you talk about impact on the environment. Electric vehicles is way more, you know, detrimental than a gas-powered car, but yet they don't seem to think that far down. And at this point, they're not going to let go of this concept come heck or high water.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we don't really, it's a good point, right? We don't think about the life cycle analysis. That's what we call it, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, oh, I got a car, it doesn't produce anything out of tailpipe, and so that's better, right? But like, what about the inputs that went into building that battery, right? Where did the minerals come from? Were they mined with child labor, for example?
Right.
Or is the carbon intensity of that battery so intense that, you know, I don't really offset the carbon that I burn when I put gasoline in my fuel tank, right? Mm-hmm. And at what point do I reach that break even in that crossover? Another great example, Dave, is CARB, the Air Resources Board, right? Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. are slapping all these new requirements on engines and on boats and on everybody else, but they often think about it only in terms of like, we need to reduce emissions. They don't think to themselves, does the technology exist in the marketplace to allow somebody to retrofit their existing vehicle so that they can produce less emissions? And so government has to work in coordination with industry and within coordination with the consumer. Like, we can all move forward together,
right?
But we can't move forward if somebody is just out there running away from everybody else out in front.
Did you see? We just had a really bad hailstorm, and did you hear what it did to the solar farms?
Oh my God! Did it destroy them?
Millions of dollars of damage to the solar farms. Like, we never have hail, guys. You never put that into any kind of a thought pattern. So now who's going to end up paying for all those solar panels?
Electrical consumers.
And I think that's why government has such a low approval rating, because they just don't think it out for the public. They just do things to do things. Crazy.
Yeah.
But hey, that's why you got a job, right, Mark?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a kind of a full-time gig based on that, right?
Yeah, I think I heard
around,
that.
We joke around up here too. You know, when they're not in Sacramento, they can't hurt you, right?
And right. So
when they go home on the legislative recess, it's always a sigh of relief for all of us. So yeah. Sorry, Ed, I cut you off.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I had heard that a electric car has to go about 70,000 miles before the carbon footprint sort of crosses over the gasoline car equivalent and starts doing better. So that's pretty far. When you think about cars getting in accidents, you know, and being totaled long before that,
Well, you're not even talking about battery replacement costs.
And that's
the value of electric cars is going to plummet. And then right now, we can't even get manufacturers. I mean, all the manufacturers are finally pushing back saying enough is enough. They're sitting on the lot. We can't sell them. Enough is enough. But anyway, let's go back to off-roading. And it just, you know, and I have to tell you, Mark, I always say, it's interesting that the government uses our money to fight us, to close us, yet we have to use our money to try to keep our government open.
Well, and here's a great example, right? Like this other bill we wanted to talk about by Damon Mathis, who's a Republican member of the Assembly out there in the East Desert kind of area. You know, he's got a bill that would allow veterans or active duty and reserve military personnel free access to state parks, right? And so, you know, you talk about our tax dollars that go to fund government, but for those of you that recreate at state off-road areas, you know that the cost of entrance into these places gets more and more expensive almost on an annual basis. You know, you can buy a pass, but to buy a day pass is getting more expensive. And I think this is a great proposal for the off-road communities to support. You probably are aware a fair number of the people that are in our community are veterans themselves, and we want to thank them for their service. And what better way to do that than to, you know, either create a reduced fee or a free day use of California state parks? I mean, these people have put their lives on the line for our country. The least we could do is let them into a state recreation area and have fun for the day, you know? So Devin Mathis has got this bill, and SDRC and Corva are proud to support it as it moves through the process. It hasn't had a hearing yet, but we will be there supporting it as it starts to make its way through this process.
Fantastic.
Okay. In the next segment, Mark, will you be able to stick around for another few minutes?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay, great.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break now, and then when we come back, a whole lot more. And Mark, I'm just thrilled that you're taking time out of your Sunday to do this, because, you know, we've got probably the only off-road show and the largest one in Southern Cal. So we appreciate all your input. So let's take a quick break. You're listening to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Hey folks, welcome back to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
Segment's brought to you by Wayne Miller Mobile Tire. Hey, he's expanded. He's doing oil changes, tune-ups, tire rotations, brake work, lift your truck, do whatever you need. Ricky's a great guy. 619-596-2800, or just go to WayneMillerMobileTire.com. Check him out and make sure you thank him for sponsoring SDORC Dirt Radio. All right, we're going to go back. Mark Smith was nice enough to hang in with us. He's our lobbyist for Corva and SDORC, and he it's a full-time job for him. Thank you very much, Government of Sacramento. We appreciate it.
You know, when you hire a lobbyist, they can help you with legislation, and we worked on, we discussed some bills. Lobbyists will help you with bills, but there's a lot of agencies in Sacramento, state agencies, and sometimes we can run into problems with them, or sometimes we need help with them. And so having a lobbyist up there, now I live in San Diego, and it's hard for me to get up to Sacramento to do stuff, but having somebody up there that can represent us is super valuable. So I'm working on a project near Ocotillo Wells, and Ocotillo Wells is the biggest state vehicular recreation area in the state. It's about 70,000 acres. And on the south end of the park, there's a highway, Highway 78, and then a road called Split Mountain Road goes south of that. And along the first half mile of the road, there are a number of campgrounds, like RV parks, where you can bring in your RV and camp there with full hookups. And there's also a store and a cafe. Now, it's hard to get to those RV parks and the store and the cafe without going down Split Mountain Road. There's roundabout ways to get there, but a lot of people don't know those. Well, Split Mountain Road, it is illegal to ride an off-road vehicle down it. Now, there's a dirt shoulder on either side, but according to the definition of the road, the width of the road goes right up to the fences of the private property on either side. And a good friend of mine got a ticket for riding down the dirt shoulder to go over to the cafe. So there's a way to change that in the state. We can have the that section of road reconfigured and called combined use. And there's a process that goes through designating a road as combined use. You have to go through a local government, like the city or county, and then you have to take it to the highway patrol. So last week I was out in the desert, and Ocotillo Wells has a new superintendent, and I had a meeting with him. I got to meet him, Enrique Arroyo. He's a nice guy. I think he's going to do good for us. So after, I went over to Split Mountain Road, and I went into one of the campgrounds, and I talked to the person in charge, Debbie, at Leaping Lizard RV Resort. And I said, I'm interested in making this road combined use. And she said, oh, we don't support that. The people go so fast down there, it would be dangerous. And I started thinking about that, and I go, you know, it is right that that highway right along there is 55 mile an hour speed limit. Well, if you're driving out in the country and you come to a community, they generally reduce the speed down to 25 or 35 miles an hour. So with this combined use idea, I think I'm going to ask to also have the speed limit slowed down by the trailer parks and the store and the cafe. So she said that would be a good idea. So I went to all the places down there to get their information, and we're going to work on support letters. And then I'm going to take the letters to the county supervisor. This is not incorporated city. This is county land. And we're going to go to the county supervisor's office, who is Joel Anderson. And he's actually been on the radio with us in this studio in this show before. And Joel's a pretty solid guy. So we'll ask his office to help us. And then we're going to have to take this idea to the Highway Patrol, the California Highway Patrol, and the commissioner of the California Highway Patrol is going to have to sign off on it. So I'll have additional homework going to the local Highway Patrol office and asking them to look at it and approve it. And then we're going to need Mark's help up in Sacramento to the commissioner of the Highway Patrol. I don't know. Mark, have you worked with the Highway Patrol before?
Yeah, I have. Actually, one of my other clients, I represent the state of California, all the 911 dispatchers across the state. So I represent all the CHP 911 dispatcher folks that you call when you call off of a state highway. Commissioner Dury is a good guy. I think we probably would have some success taking this item forward. Believe it or not, combined use, which you're talking about, Ed, has been on the books. It's been a law in California since 1971. and occasionally we tinker with it. I pulled up the statute and was looking at it earlier today. We amended it last back in 2022. But, I mean, that's exactly what this section of the code talks about. It talks about making sure that the roads of the state of California are accessible to all the people that need them in a reasonable and responsible manner. There's a limitation. They can't be longer than 3 miles of combined use, but I think the area you're talking about is about a mile in length. And frankly, I think it's an important thing to do for safety for everybody, you know?
Yeah, I think lowering the speed limit would really be a big safety thing and convenience. Ocotillo Wells, there's not a lot of restaurants and stores right on the border of it. And this one little road has a number of places where people can go. And to be able to have the ability to reach those resources.
Are there even any posted speed limit signs? I don't think I've ever seen anything posted.
No, but it defaults to the general.
Well, yeah.
Right. All those kind of roads go to 55 miles an hour.
The consumers don't know that.
No. There is a sign there that says no off-road vehicle use along this highway, but there's no speed limit along there. But I think it's one of those where it defaults to 55. But I would love to see it 35, because people do go flying down there right by the establishments. One of them, the store by the trailer park, has a sign that says slow down, there's children around. And it's true. And people go across the street, and off-road vehicles or people going into the park slow down and pull in and pull out. So I think this is a solid project. And with your help up in Sacramento, I think there's a good chance we can pull this off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to dig into this with you, Ed. And on the topic of signage, the statute's got some pretty clear requirements in terms of putting signage in these designated areas. And actually, it says that the Off-Highway Vehicle Trust Fund, which is what we all pay into through our fuel taxes and everything else, are supposed to help pay for those signs. So if we were successful in getting this forward, absolutely there'd have to be signage, speed limit, you know, otherwise notification, so that the general public that's driving down this area of the road knows what's going on.
Yeah, and I don't think it would be very much money. And that would be something we would take to the Off-Highway Vehicle Commission, maybe, and ask them to help us support it. And one of the commissioners lives near there or has a second home in that area, Tom Lemon. I think he would probably want to help us with this one. There's also another area on Ocotillo Wells on the north side that I would like to designate. And I got a little pushback from somebody who said it's a little bit too dangerous over there. So I'm not sure what to do with that. The county supervisor is in support of it. This is in Imperial County, and it's hard to go from Ocotillo Wells up into Truckhaven Hills without either going on the highway or having a high degree of skill, or else loading up your vehicle and driving around on the highway. So that's something else I'd like to do, but we'll take it one step at a time. We'll work on this the Split Mountain Road project first. So having somebody in my court up in Sacramento, It's such a big help with these bills and this agency, and there's a whole bunch of other agencies. The air pollution people, they cracked down on off-road vehicles a few years ago. They ended the red sticker program, and that was just difficult. And there's other, I don't know, can you name any other agencies that would have an effect on us, Mark?
I mean, everybody under the California Natural Resources Agency, right? That's the umbrella agency that CDFW and parks and everybody else are under, right? But I mean, if you just think about all of the different entities at both the state and the federal level that have management responsibilities for the places where people like to go and recreate, whether that's in the beach, whether that's in the Northern California mountains, whether that's out in the desert down there. It's like this myriad patchwork of different agencies. And I think one of the challenges that we deal with all the time, Ed, is like they don't communicate with each other very well, right? Sometimes we are the liaison between the feds and the state, or this entity within the state and that entity within the state, because the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. But we get the impact of it, and then we've got to go make sure that they're communicating and try to get everybody on a page. You know, government is this multi-layered bureaucracy that just can be really, really difficult to navigate. And that is, you know, honestly why people like me have a job doing what I do, because, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of every area the way you do down there, Ed, or the way Amy does up here in the north. But, you know, I speak government bureaucraties, right? And so, like, I help navigate that stuff. And it is a full-time job just to try to get that done.
Yeah, and you think that they would all be working in conjunction for their constituents, but it just doesn't seem to be that way. It's like they constantly seem like they're working to make it difficult for folks to live in California. Mm-hmm.
I never would have thought that I would experience people leaving California in droves, particularly more right-leaning people. But people, they want more for their money. They want less government interference. They want lower taxes and more freedom. And California seems to be just turning the screws on us. So it's tough. Yeah. There's an area, a state vehicular recreation area called Oceano Dunes. Uh-oh. And they've had a lot of trouble there. They have the air pollution people going after them, the species people going after them, and the California Coastal Commission going after them. And that's a tough thing. I'm kind of relieved we didn't see any bills having to do with the California Coastal Commission this year. I think last year they had a bill that tried to expand their power. Yeah, their power a little bit.
Yeah. Well, all we can say, Mark, is we're thrilled to have you on board. Keep up the good work, and we appreciate a periodic call-in just to keep the public involved. And what would be a suggestion for the listeners? What would you like them to do to help you with your challenge?
Well, you know, to the listeners who are out there, I would say, you know, join your local club, be aware of what's going on, you know, be available to send a letter or to do an action alert on an issue of particular importance to the community. I think the place where the environmental community runs laps around us sometimes is they're just really good at getting 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 people to sign a petition, right? Or to send this email, click here, send this email to your legislator and tell them what you want them to do, right? Like, we need to do that kind of thing too. We need to be able to make sure that our voices are heard, because I think at the end of the day, legislators care about what the people in their communities want, and they don't know what you want if you're not able to speak up, right? So not everybody has to play the role that Ed plays or the role that I play or even the role that you play, Dave, in providing access to stuff like this, but everybody does have a voice, and I think it's super important that we exercise that voice. But you know, I'm happy to come anytime you want. I don't have much of a life. You can call me any day on Sunday. I'll call into your show, and you guys ask me back as many times as you want. I had a real pleasure today.
Well, we really appreciate it, and you're a plethora of knowledge, and we know we got the right guy in the seat, and we look forward to working with you down the road.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on, Mark. We appreciate having you here.
What we'll do is I'll have Ed send you this show so you can just sort of put it in your archives.
Appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. We got another special guest lined up right here on SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Folks, welcome back. You're listening to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Segment's brought to you by Lifestyle Garage. If you have a Jeep, Ford, Dodge, Chevy, and you want to trick it out, you want to have it done by an expert, that would be Lifestyle Garage right over there in lovely Lakeside. Give them a call, 619-499-5323. Make an appointment, because you have to make an appointment, but they do drivetrain upgrades, exhaust system, suspension, you name it, they do it. And if you're not familiar with S&S Off-Road Magazine, that magazine's been around longer than the off-road community, I think. Sherry and her husband do a phenomenal job. It's all online now, so you don't have to go hunt it down in a magazine stand at 7-Eleven. You can go online, and there's hundreds and hundreds of pages. S&S Off-Road Magazine, go to SSORMAG.com and sit back and enjoy the off-road. You can buy stuff off of it. You can sell things to the people like-minded like yourself. It is amazing. Check it out. All right, so you've got a little Utah issue or Idaho issue.
There's a problem going on in Idaho. The Bureau of Land Management is forming a travel management plan in Idaho. It's in the Owyhee County of Idaho, Owyhee. I personally have never been there, but the Blue Ribbon Coalition sent out an alert, and for those of you who listen, a few months ago, Ben Burr, their executive director, was here in our studio talking for an hour, and he sent out an alert saying that this travel management plan is being formed, and there's some bad stuff in it. They want to close many, many routes. The area currently has about 1,100 miles of motorcycle single track, and they want to cut it down depending on the alternative. There's four alternatives, and from like 250, 350, 450 miles of routes, and cutting out a lot of them. So I started looking into the plan, and it has about 100 pages. So I'm looking around, and one area uses a thing called the K factor of soil, and they're using this to close some routes. Well, I'd never heard of it, so I looked it up, and there's this equation called the universal soil loss equation that predicts annual soil loss. It has a bunch of factors, and K factor is one of them. And K factor is like when it rains and water washes away some of the dirt. That's the K factor. But there's also like the slope, the steepness, and some other factors in there. So I asked them that if they're going to use K factor to close trails, that they need to state that, and they need to go through the universal soil loss equation for each area to prove that that's what's actually going on. So in another part of the plan, they state that in the county where the OHV area is, off-highway vehicle registration has increased 258% in recent years, and yet they're closing lots of routes to counteract that. And that just seems counterintuitive. It just seems kind of crazy what they should be doing. And what I said in my comment is that instead of closing routes, they should be looking to open more routes so that the additional off-road vehicle users will have space without running into each other. Special status species. They have a whole section on special status species. But what's interesting about that is that these species are not on the endangered species list. And there's two levels of endangered species. There's endangered and then there's threatened. Now, they sound different, but they are actually treated the same out on the landscape. So if a species is listed as either one, they will close areas. They will do a variety of activities to protect an animal or plant. But in this plan, they mention special status species and as a reason to close routes, and there's no legal justification for that. They just think that these are nice species. There's another part that they put in that is making me crazy, and I started reading into it. And I was curious because I hadn't seen this on management plans before. It said that the route density on a wildlife, okay, the effects of route density on wildlife vary by species. However, the area route density greater than 2 miles of route per square mile exceeds a threshold for many land animals. And 1 mile of trail per square mile has been determined to be the maximum threshold for naturally functioning large populations of mammals. And then they have a name. They have two names, Foreman and Hesberger, 1996. So they're using this Foreman and Hesberger study as an excuse to close a whole bunch of routes. And so I looked up Foreman and Hesberger, 1996, and I found their study, and I started looking through it. Now, they're using it to justify closing motorcycle single-track trails that are 1 foot wide. And so I get into this study, and they're talking about paved highways.
What?
Yes, Dave. They're talking about this study says that paved highways has an effect on large mammals. Well, I agree with that.
I do, too.
How would anybody... But they're using that as a justification to close motorcycle single track dirt trails 1 foot wide. It's making me insane. I immediately, when I figured that out, I called Ben Burr, who was in here before, and I said, Ben, do you know what I just found? And he hadn't really looked at it. Nobody really had figured that out yet. So somebody in the BLM, in that office, decided to use this as an excuse to close routes.
Yeah, but see, their whole mindset, if they throw enough against the wall, you can't see it all. Right?
They're trying.
But I mean, I'm just saying, if they throw enough garbage up on the wall,
maybe something will
you're
stick.
Gonna miss. You're gonna miss it. Because you don't work full time looking for this stuff. They do. Mm-hmm. That's their job, to try to slide things through. And what you know as well as I do, once it becomes law, you're toast.
Exactly. Once this gets passed and signed, that's the law, and that's how it's going to be for a long time.
Jeez.
So and Dave, like you heard me before, I talked about special status species that they're talking about that are not endangered or threatened. They're not on the list. They're just special status that they are looking at. Registrations, they mention in the plan that off-road vehicle registrations has gone up by 258%.
Really?
And yet they're closing routes like by crazy instead of opening routes to accommodate more vehicles. So they're just making me insane.
Well, they're taking the money and closing the entertainment.
They take our money and they use the money to close us out of the areas. Making me crazy.
Just insane.
So this thing I found, it's just crazy. So I told Ben about it, and he's going to work on it. He'll tell the BLM, and the congressman for that area is off-road friendly. So we think that the congressman will have an effect, a positive effect on us. That's Idaho BLM. And those comments are due April 15th. So I'll be getting those in a few days. I have them mostly done. So there's some other stuff going on that we're going to be looking at. The Desert Advisory Council will be having a virtual meeting April 24th. And I am appointed to the Desert Advisory Council. So we'll be looking at a variety of topics for that meeting. I will be spending my entire Saturday sitting in front of my computer working on that. I mentioned Ocotillo Wells has a new superintendent, Enrique Arroyo. I had an hour and a half meeting with him last week, and he's a nice guy. I think he's going to work out great. There's been problems with event permits. Corva and Tierra del Sol have both had a lot of trouble getting their recent event permits sorted out, and he said he's going to be working on that specifically.
Well, that's good.
So I'm happy about that. Bureau of Land Management, El Centro office also has a new manager, Matthew Lohr, and I got to spend an hour and a half with him, and I think he's a good guy too. So I'm happy that they have found somebody good in that spot. Corral Canyon, we're having a trail day May 4th. We'll be mainly trimming bushes out of the way on the routes that are open down there. So I'll be down there May 4th. Lakeside Rodeo Parade, the Lakeside Parade, April 20th. SDRC will be having
here again.
A float. I know, it's already here. Do you want to be in it? Bring your mini bike?
I don't have a mini bike. I gave it to Brittany.
Oh, you got your Honda Talon, right?
I got my Honda
Talon,
yeah. Maybe. On a Saturday or Sunday?
It's a Saturday.
I might be able to.
Maybe you can get that stereo put in time.
And play some. Nah, they don't have any stereos for the Honda yet. The Honda's still too new.
Okay, well, you can bring your Ion Block Rocker.
There you go.
And then the off-highway vehicle grants are out for comment until the beginning of May, and I haven't broken into them very far, but I will be commenting on lots of grants. If you want to look at what the local agencies and the federal agencies are doing, what they want to do with your money, that's a good place to go. And if you don't know how to look at those grants, feel free to contact me at info@sdrc.org. I can talk you through, and you want to see what Glamis is, what they're doing at Glamis, the Cleveland National Forest, the Mojave, up in Big Bear, out in Lucerne Valley, Johnson Valley, all those places, they're all getting state park grants, and that money is going to be used for, hopefully, for off-roading, and I'm going to write comments on it.
All right, folks, go to sdrc.com, get more information, join the club, $10 a month, right?
It's $25 a year.
Ah, even cheaper.
It's just a bargain.
Just get involved. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but San Diego Automotive Museum Radio is in the house, and then we got a show for you right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Thanks for joining us for San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio with Dave Stahl, the program that is working to further off-roading as a safe family experience while promoting and preserving the natural environment. To learn more about SDORC and how you can get involved, visit sdorc.org. That's sdorc.org. Join us next week at this same time for more of the latest news and initiatives in preserving the use of off-highway vehicles while protecting the land and wildlife at the same time. This has been San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio on The Answer San Diego.